Hi, John. Hi, Stacy. We're live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. I'm the other guy on The Other Podcast. Hi, folks. It's John Hogue here, sitting across the dining room table from Stacy. Stacy, by the way, blogs at a rather interesting spot on the internet called theothermccain.com. He can also be found writing for other interesting spots around the web.
And you can find my good friend John Hogue at hoguewash.com or on Twitter. That's twitter.com/WJJHogue.
Yes, H-O-G-E, in case you can't spell. There's
wondering
no.
How it's
but, well, actually, there are some. I do have some distant cousins who do put a U in the spelling of the name, and that's because in the 1790s, there was a court clerk in Pulaski, Virginia, who couldn't spell. But that's beside the point. Hi, Diana. I see you're connected.
Hey. Hello, hello. Here I am.
Yes. Glad to have you.
Well, are you going to talk about football, Stacy? We usually do that in the fall.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I am sorry.
Stacy's been distracted.
By the way, the election has spilled over into the world of college football, and you asked me how that could possibly happen. Well, as you know, President Trump won in Florida, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so right now the score between Florida, hang on a second, I'm waiting for it to load. Yes, right now Florida has 41 points, while Georgia, which was stolen for Biden, only has 28.
Well, we're going to have to look further into the Steele dossier.
Yes, okay. Well, anyways, in other football scores, Indiana 38, Michigan 21. Indiana went heavily for Trump.
And we'll still have to look into the Steele dossier.
Yeah, and Michigan not so much. Anyways, yeah,
by the way,
Marshall is ranked number 16. They're from West Virginia, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's Trump country. 51, University of Massachusetts 10. I'm just reading the scores here, folks. Oklahoma 55, Kansas 3. Oklahoma State 20, Kansas State 12. Cincinnati 38, Houston 10, SMU 47, Temple 23, USC 28, Arizona State 27, Texas 17, West Virginia 13, and Liberty University in an intrastate matchup. Liberty University 38, Virginia Tech 35.
Well, that's interesting because Lynchburg went red and Blacksburg went blue.
Oh, is that
on the other hand, it's happening. Vanderbilt, which is in one of the very few blue counties in Tennessee, 14, Mississippi State 24 at Starksville with 43 seconds left. So yeah. That's kind of a
thing. The way to go is to look at who's football team. And by the way, Alabama's taking a week off this week, so I don't really care about football when Alabama's not playing.
Well, you know, what happened to Auburn this week?
I don't see them on the schedule.
And maybe they're
either,
off as so. Well. Tennessee, those are the only.
I don't know. I mean,
anyway, those are the only two teams that need to lose.
Meanwhile, this week, number one, Clemson, right? We'll take on Notre Dame. So we will see about how that turns.
Well, see,
out.
That's an even break, South Carolina and Indiana.
So. Yeah. Well,
although I'm not sure. I think the county Notre Dame is in went blue. So
yeah,
there
well,
is that.
I was in that county, went through that county on my way to Michigan a couple of weeks ago. So, but anyways, well, I suppose everyone is ready to talk about the election
And we're going to talk about the down ballot stuff first.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the really important things, namely that Sheriff Bob got reelected in Pinellas County, Florida. Bob Gualtieri, who is the sheriff there, and I love this guy. I want him for president in 2024. I mean, this guy is good. And I was worried, you know, because they were talking about, as on election night, we were, as we had our special live podcast on, we were watching this, you know, we were, we were watching Florida, and there was so much turnout, and we were so focused on the presidential race that I didn't.
Well, there was a lot of that going on. In fact, it looks like because the difference in performance between the down ballot Democrats versus Biden, that they were not actually, they were just focusing on top of the ballot of that ballot harvesting.
Yeah. And I think that is perhaps evidence, but Bob Gualtieri was reelected with 62% of the vote against this pest of a social justice warrior that ran against him, you know. And it's like I really consider it dishonorable to run against this guy. He's such a good sheriff. He should never have any competition. I mean, it's just like, why? Okay, it's over. You're sheriff for life, you know. But Pinellas County had a big car theft problem. They still
Well, first of all, we probably, for those of folks out there in podcast land who aren't aware of the geography of Florida, we should point out that we're talking about the Tampa Bay area.
Yeah, it's the west side of Tampa Bay. Yes, west side.
St. Pete.
St. Petersburg, Largo, and Clearwater. And they had this just out of control car theft problem. And three of the mugs were killed in a fiery crash, okay? And this is how all car thieves should die. I hate car thieves, man. It just,
well, it depends on if it's my car. I just assume it got trashed either.
Yeah. Well, anyways, this car was going 117 miles an hour, okay, when it crashed into a Toyota. And then went airborne, crashed into five parked cars, and struck a billboard pole 10 feet above the ground. Folks, if you want to watch this video.
And we're not even to the crazy people are dangerous segment
yet. It was like, oh, I'm so glad they're dead. You know,
this sounds like this perfect sort of law and order candidate that would not have appealed in Portland.
Yeah. I think what we need, and one of the things I put the video, it's on my site about Sheriff Bob. I put the video of this press conference he did, and he's got such a good demeanor, I guess you would say. He is very, very factual and tough. And I think that, and so I am not kidding. If we're going to get a grassroots outsider for 2024, I'm going with Sheriff Bob.
Well, I can't remember which county it was, but a couple of years ago, one of the counties in the center part of the state in Florida, some bozo killed a state trooper, and the sheriff and two or three of his deputies found the guy hiding in some woods. And at the press conference, one of the reporters asked the sheriff why they shot the guy 87 times. And the sheriff responded, well, we ran out of ammunition.
Right. By the way, another great sheriff down in Florida. They've got a couple of good ones. Polk County Sheriff Grady, let me make sure I've got this name right. I think it's Is it Grady Judd? Yes, Sheriff Grady Judd. If you ever get a chance to see one of his press conferences, he is good, baby. I mean, I saw him do a press conference on, they had apprehended a murder. He said, we have 100% solve rate for our homicide unit. Okay, for the 8 years running, 100%. So if you want to murder somebody, you better get your butt out of Polk County. That's Winter Haven, Lakeland. You know, it's in the central part of.
But
the
you know,
state.
It's interesting on the down ballot races, even in what I would call the non-critical to the Democrat. Races now. For example, Kelly in Arizona apparently has participated just as well as Biden. But you look at the performance going down ballot, McGrath, right, who got absolutely pounded by McConnell, still outperformed Biden. Yeah. Jones, who got absolutely pounded in Alabama, outperformed Biden by like 3 points. And so it's interesting. But also Hickenlooper, who was pretty much of a shoe-in in Colorado, underperformed and said, you know, but only by 2% or so. So it's interesting looking at the down ballot races. One of the down ballot races, which I really wasn't aware of, and I didn't find results about until I looked at the BBC's website. The BBC is actually doing a better job of covering the election than most of our media. Madison Cawthorn, do you remember him?
Yes.
Yes. He was the guy at the Republican National Convention and who stood up out of his wheelchair for the national anthem. Well, he is going to be the Congress critter from the 11th Congressional District in North Carolina. He got 54% of the vote, which is even better than Trump. And I, you know, but what really bothers me about this is that I find this out on the BBC.
Right.
It's like, hello, testing. You know, the guy is going to be the youngest congressman elected since 1965. Only one other congressman who was legally elected was younger. That was a guy from Tennessee back in 65. Now, there was back in the 1790s, there was a person elected to Congress who died before his 25th birthday, but he actually served a term, even though he was too young, according to the Constitution. So, you know, here you have the Republicans electing a millennial. You know, I find out from the BBC. You know, it's like, hello, testing. Who is doing the coverage here? And the answer is, well, people who are in on what I'm calling the Steele, that's spelled with an A, the Steele dossier.
Yes. You know, my election night blog post to accompany our podcast, my headline at 11:10 p.m. was Trump wins, you know, and at that point, it looked like a tidal wave, looked like a red tidal wave, you know, that he was leading Michigan by double digits at that point.
Yeah.
Then the dead rose from their graves in Detroit.
Yes, they did.
The ghosts don't come out on Halloween. They come out on Election Day, and they vote Democrat in alphabetical order.
Well, yeah, it was interesting. I think the champion at one point. I was reading the oldest voter who allegedly voted in Michigan had been born in 1850, And then a few hours later, they found a voter who had voted who was born in 1828.
I think it was 1823. I think, I know what you're talking about. The thing is, and this is liberals talk about voter suppression.
You had all these people who we've tried to keep from voting, and merely because they're older than the oldest person alive on the planet Earth.
Yeah.
This idea of voter suppression gets recycled every time Democrats lose an election. We saw it after the 2000 Florida election, is when this voter suppression thing climbed up out of the swamp, as it were, and it rolled around again in 2000, as you know, to explain why John Kerry lost, as if anyone needs to explain why he would lose. But then it disappeared. It took an 8-year vacation, as it were, until Trump won, and then suddenly voter suppression. But here is the thing, is that one of the things that they charged in Georgia, right, that if you go back to 2018 when Stacey Abrams lost the governor's race by 55,000 votes, one of the things they did that they claimed was voter suppression was simply the fact that in rural counties, one thing that was going on was that they were consolidating precincts because they were closing down certain voting sites because the population couldn't sustain it. Okay,
that's going through rural America, and it's not just voting. There are Carroll County, Maryland, is the place where the first Methodist missionary came to the United States, and there are over 100. Methodist churches in Carroll County. Now, this is a county with a population of under 200,000, right? Mm-hmm. And there are bunches of Methodist churches that the Methodist church doesn't know how to support anymore. Because they literally don't have pastors. They have 3 or 4 members. And the same thing's happening throughout rural America.
And anyways, and one of the things they did was to close down certain, and this was done by county governments. It wasn't done on the directions of the Republican Secretary of State, Brian Kemp. And another thing that they did was they purged the voter roll. A new law was passed, or a new regulation, I don't know which it was, but the point was is that some counties simply had not, you've got to purge your voter rolls. Usually it's 2 or 3 elections. If you haven't voted in a certain number of elections and then they look at the thing, do they have evidence that you still live in the county? And so this business of purging the voter rolls, because people move away, people die or whatever, what you've got going on in Philadelphia and Detroit, obviously, okay, I don't know about Milwaukee, but what's going on in Philadelphia and Detroit is that they have simply let these dead voters stay on the rolls so long that they have an almost infinite number. I think you will find out that when all is said and done, that you have over 100% turnout in some precincts.
In a lot of states. We're looking the worst. Where did I see that? Never mind. There was one chart I saw from Real Clear Politics showing that in several states there was at least 100%. There was 101% turnout. Georgia was 96%. One state, and don't ask me just this instant if it was Michigan or Wisconsin, was some ridiculous amount, like 105% turnout.
Yeah, in other words, what they're doing is they're doing same-day registration. This is another innovation,
that's
reform,
still
or whatever they want to call it. They have... same day registration, right? Well, in many of these, you know, somebody pointed out that Joe Frazier voted in Philadelphia. The problem? Joe Frazier's dead. Okay, the world champion boxer.
Yeah.
He died a few years ago.
Yeah.
But he still voted this time. Well,
But, you know, it's interesting. One of it has been so open and so gross.
Yes.
That I think what we're going to see nationwide is the same thing that happened actually as a result of electing a Democratic governor in Maryland. Now, Maryland is the one place where it's very rare for them to have to steal the election to elect a Democrat, because the Democrat registration's 2-1. But it happened that this was a year when there just wasn't enough Democrat turnout. So there were a couple of precincts that voted more than 100% of their population. Not registration, population. And that was so far out of line that there were some reforms done here in Maryland. And for example, one of the official copies of my wife's death certificate went to the County Board of Elections. Mm-hmm. And they purged her from, and I verified at the next election that my wife was no longer registered to vote. So, you know, I think some of this has been so overt that we're going to see between now and 2024's election cycle, we're going to see some reform. I don't think we'll see it until 2023, and I'll explain why later, but mm-hmm. I think they've blown it. But, you know, what's the story that you're hearing in the local news in Georgia now?
Honestly, mostly what I'm seeing is a lot of what is going on here. For one thing, the business of some citizens organized themselves to go and ask in Gwinnett County, what is going on with this count? And they arrested them. They weren't trying to break in or anything. They just wanted
Where
to
was this?
Gwinnett.
Oh,
Gwinnett County, I think. It was either Gwinnett or Fulton. I can't remember exactly.
It's Gwinnett, by the way. I just want to say that. It's not Gwinnett.
You're going to have to learn to talk Southern eventually.
These are localism. It's named for Button Gwinnett.
I know, but that's just like one of the main streets in Nashville is Lafayette Street.
Right. There's also a Lafayette, Georgia.
Yes. There's also a Cairo, which I thought was
Cairo, yes.
Cairo.
The
city that I looked at and said, "Oh, the name of it is Berlin." It's actually Berlin. I mean, I'm learning. It's just
it's not just the South. There's Beatrice, Nebraska, and Peru, Indiana, and Katy is Kentucky, and New Madrid, Missouri.
Yeah. And anyway, there's a lot of anger and confusion. And there's also a lot of don't expect the Atlanta paper to be open about how messed up this situation is. But the locals, most people are really, really upset.
Well, you know, I looked at the exit polls out of Georgia, and mm-hmm. and was some of these things were interesting. For instance, Trump got 11% of the black vote, 41% of the Latino vote mm-hmm. in Georgia. Breaking it down, okay, Biden got 65% of the urban vote.
Mm-hmm.
The suburban vote went 51-47 for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And rural Georgia, it was 68-30 for Trump. To go on I'm getting down here. In Georgia, 72% of white men voted for Trump, as did 67% of white women, and 51% of Latino men voted for Trump. So, it's the idea of who you think, right, votes for who, right? You see, in other words, this stereotype of who the Trump voter is in Georgia, and again, I'm reading the election polls here. The middle class, right? The middle class that making between $50,000 and $100,000 a year voted for Trump 53-45. Those making below $50,000 voted for Biden 56-41. Those making more than $100,000 a year, however, went for Biden by a narrow margin, 50-48.
But see, a significant number of people who make, I won't go at 100,000, but a lot of people who make more than, say, $250,000 a year, because of their high earnings, even when taxes go up, are essentially insulated. You know, and the wealthy actually don't have all that much cash flow to be hit with income tax. So yeah, it's really kind of interesting.
Right. But you're supposed to believe, right, that the Trump voter is an uncouth redneck, right?
Well,
okay. Well, among college educated voters, okay, in Georgia, exit poll data, mind you, among white voters with a college degree, Trump beat Biden by 14%. 56-42.
Which is in general better than he did with college educated people around the country. But here's the thing. Trump improved his margins with every category of voter other than white men.
Right.
Yes.
White women, black men, black women, Hispanics, both sexes, right? It doesn't make any difference any other way you can spin it. You know, the only people he got fewer votes from this year were white men. Okay. Well,
that's a percentage.
Yeah. But I mean, that's not what we were told in the polling.
Right.
The polling got it completely wrong.
Oh, and God, the polls were so bad.
But a lot of this was push polling to set things up for the kind of, theft that we're seeing right now going forward in places like Pennsylvania. And Jeff Dunitz had a good post, our friend Yid with Lid. Fellow fraud fighters, take a breath and make sure we get it right, because that's what's important. Just throwing up a big smoke screen is not going to do any good. It's going to take evidence, because this is going to go to the courts, and the courts are going to have to do it with evidence. So people need to, rather than going off half-cocked, basically we need to nail everything down as tight as we can, as quickly as we can, but as tight as we can.
The point is that this will be contested in the courts.
Right. But here's the
difference. And I'm not a lawyer. I'm not in Philadelphia. I'm not in Detroit. I'm not in Phoenix. There's nothing.
So you're not a Philadelphia lawyer.
There are a lot of, I'm not in a position to help. There's nothing I can do. It's beyond my control. And so what I'm trying to do is remain calm.
Yes. And well, as I often say, keep calm and carry. But the thing is, it's going to require evidence. And the difference between the Steele dossier and the Steele dossier is that in 2020, there's evidence. There's hundreds of affidavits now. James O'Keefe has got a video up of a postal worker named Richard Hopkins confirming that he was ordered to about the orders that were given about incorrectly postmarking mail. So, you know, there's evidence, and that's what it's going to take to do it. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is, if you want to support what's going on, there are various ways that you can, if you have information, get it in, or if you want to help provide support for the lawyers who are doing the work, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you just rather support this podcast, if you go to theothermccain.com, you'll see a cheerful yellow button.
Yes, folks, if you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice in near the top of the center column a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to the support of the blog and also the podcast. And meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's blog, hoagwash.com.
There is in the sidebar a icon. There's an icon there of a tip jar. And you click on it, you'll be taken away to my PayPal account, and you can bless me with a donation. Or you can scroll down further in the sidebar and click on that icon of a hat. It will take you off to the Hoagwash store where you can buy all sorts of interesting, paraphernalia. Interesting paraphernalia related to the blog through the various ways that's branded. And I get a cut of that action as well. Or you can shop the Amazon links at Hoagwash or the other McCain, or lots of other bloggers, by the way, who participate in the Amazon Associates Program. We bloggers who have those links and can earn a commission when people use the qualified links to buy things through Amazon. But the most important thing is that big yellow button, which brings us to the five most important words in the English language.
The five most important words in the English language are hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please. And we will be very thankful if you do it. Meanwhile, over at Hoagwash.com, I have a post called As Some of the Dust Settles. Guess it's going to be a few days or weeks before we know whether Joe Biden's, and I quote, most extensive and inclusive voter fraud, unquote, has flipped enough states to hand him the presidential election. While the Democrats' operation has been really extensive and inclusive, it certainly has been stealthy. It's been a in-your-face exercise of raw power by corrupt election officials and their enablers. The thing is, too many people now have seen how the sausage is being made, and I expect that there are actually really going to be some effective steps taken to improve election security, and it'll happen before the 2024 election. The Democrats may have won the presidential battle, but they probably have lost the overall campaign. There's been just unexpectedly good performance by Republicans up and down the ballot. And the Republicans have got more control in more state legislatures. And guess who gets to do the redistricting for the congressional districts for the 2022 election, right? That's not going to be good for the House Democrats. And it looks like Pelosi's headed for the slimmest majority in recent history. The Republicans may get it to even within like 4 or 5 votes. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans are probably going to maintain control of the Senate. That's going to provide a firewall against most of the Democrats' crazy legislative wish list, especially court packing. Oh, and speaking of the courts, we now have a significantly greater percentage of judges who actually believe in following the Constitution of the law. So if Biden's wins the election, my projection is that Harris is going to be a failed one-term president. But Pyrrhus was unavailable for comment. Hey.
Have some doubts about the Senate for one reason. Both of Georgia's Senate seats are up for runoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Given the massive fraud that we've seen in the presidential election, what makes you think that the Democrats aren't going to pull out all the stops to return two Democrat senators from Georgia?
Bluntly, the Second Amendment.
Well, in other words, once you're aware of the possibility, right? Once you are aware of the possibility of fraud, it sort of lowers the chances of fraud. And I think no one in Georgia this time expected what happened. I think everyone else was like me, right? Knowing that Trump had won, right? He had I won't say it was a 5-point margin, or it may have been
serious.
In 2016, what?
It was a serious margin. Seriously, we went to bed. I think I may have been the only one of us who said, I don't think it's outside of the margin of fraud, of theft.
Yeah.
And that was my fear.
I could not, but the point is that, and I wanted to, what I was trying to get to was the point of saying it. Hang on a second here. I am trying to find, yes, what was Trump's margin? Yeah, he won it, like I said, 5 points 4 years ago.
Right.
Okay. So almost every other state, right? He increased his vote total and increased his vote share from 4 years ago. He was more popular by about 7 million votes more this time than he got last time. And so you might think, right, that some of that would have shown up in Georgia, and yet, curiously, no. So I want people to go back and look at the county by county votes in 2018 and 2016, and look at the county by county votes and see if you can't figure out if fraud happened in Georgia, where and how it happened. You should be able to prove it statistically.
No, you can. And that's actually part of the legal argument that's being presented to the courts is that it's just the statistical unreliability of the way the votes changed.
Yes.
And I'll tell you something else, though. The one thing that people are not going to believe at all going into this runoffs or the pair of runoffs in Georgia, any pre-election polling.
Oh my God.
I'll tell you where you might want to put your poll.
No.
Okay.
Let me put it to you like this. Jeff.
Oh, wait. We've got dogs barking.
Okay. Yes. Hello, yes. Dogs.
Did Jefferson
barking.
Just come in
Yes,
the door?
Jefferson just came in the door.
All right. My son Jefferson is here.
And being greeted by Marley and Ginger both. Anyway, Jeff Dunitz, right, who I mentioned a little while ago, our friend who blogs is Yid with Lid. Jeff tweeted, is political polling dead?
Yes.
Well, I replied, well, it's certainly starting to smell funny.
Well, my favorite thing was something that Larry Correa said. Regarding that he has this great long list of red flags. And before Larry became a best-selling science fiction, well, urban fantasy, really, novelist, he was an accountant. And he said, and I love this, any of these things, all the red flags he listed, would be enough to trigger an audit in the normal world. this many flags, and I'd be giggling in anticipation of catching some thieves.
Yes.
Yeah.
And well, that's kind of where I am.
Well, I mean, yes, but I mean, you know, the late night spikes are the statistically improbable breakdown of the ratios, the vote dumps, the ratios that these dumps are better than the percentages of the bluest blue cities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Biden outperforming Obama.
Yeah, right.
Poll observers being removed.
Cheering okay. when the GOP observers were removed.
Yeah. Or the or the Postal Service whistleblower.
Mm-hmm. There are two of them, I think. Yeah. 2 a.m. Deliveries of ballot boxes.
Yes. Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's like, and then he ties it up with, and it isn't that I have to do better. I'm just a Gen Pop observer who happens to be a retired auditor with a fairly finely tuned bullshit detector.
Yes.
This is going to the courts. And he's right.
Oh, he's right.
Okay. He is right.
But I love Larry's rants.
But let's pretend that somehow the courts say there isn't enough evidence. There's nothing we can do.
Impossible.
But let's pretend. Sarah Hoyt had a wonderful post called Let the Joker Go Wild. And my comment to it was, Simon Jester smiles quietly to himself. For those of you who are not Heinlein fans, there is a novel you should read called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
My favorite.
And yes, one of the actually fictional characters in the fiction is a guy by the name of Simon Jester, who is basically kind of like Kilroy, except that he is responsible for graffiti that appear all over the walls of Luna City. Luna mm-hmm. City is a penal colony, and this involves that involves a uprising against the warden. And you know, I was very much interested in the way. Well, actually, she was prodded into doing this after reading Larry Correa's post herself.
Yes.
But basically, we don't, as Americans, do fascism very well. We just aren't compliant enough. We tend to, we tend to resist. And there's all sorts of wonderful ways that we might resist. And really, you know, we should be inspired by the people in Hong Kong from last year and just not get in line. Or at least that's her suggestion.
One of the things that one of the most important things that I have to, and I've said it over and over again, is that people need to calm down. Mm-hmm. Okay? We don't need any violence.
Mm-hmm.
We don't angry words.
Well,
look, do you remember, after Trump won, the boo-hooing from the liberals, the sky is falling, doomed, screaming at the sky. You remember the videos that circulated, that went viral, of people literally screaming at the sky because
There's one poor girl who's stuck forever as that meme.
Yeah. And don't be the reverse of that. Don't be the obverse. In other words, the thing to do is, if you can't say something helpful, say nothing. And I'm seeing a lot of people on Twitter, okay, who just need to shut the fuck up, okay? How about you log off of Twitter for one day? Okay, you don't have to comment on everything that happens, you know. And I'm telling you, is that these people who always have to comment and comment and comment on every little passing political thing, some of them just need to learn to shut their mouths, okay?
Well,
excuse
you know.
Excuse my French.
Well, that and perhaps they should switch to decaf.
I like the way
Sarah Hoyt ends her post. Mm-hmm. Borrow a motto from Hong Kong and be like water. Mm-hmm. Be funny. Be fluid. Move from thing to thing. Frustrate their attempt at tracking and controlling us. Start mm-hmm. now. Start by disseminating the story of Grand Theft Election in cartoon and song, in meme, in funny rhyme, and dramatic play that reveals just what corrupt and ridiculous the hell spawn would rule over us. Mm-hmm. Be the first kid on your block to give the left a curl on the floor in the fetal position, crying tears and snot, mental breakdown. Do it today. No power on earth can make you be compliant and gentle and sweet. So don't. Be American with both feet and as hard as you can. But you notice none of that, though, is about raging on Twitter.
No.
It's about ridicule. And rule number, there's more than one rule five, Stacey. Alinsky's rule five says ridicule is man's most potent weapon.
Yes.
Okay. These people can tolerate our calling them evil because they think that means we're saying that they are at least smarter than we are. But what they cannot tolerate is our laughter. And that's what I'm calling people to. Making fun of them as robustly as we can. Which brings us, Stacy, to the end of our little list of things to talk about. We're now, and speaking of list, we have our crazy person who is dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alexandria Occasional Cortex, a.k.a. Che Guevara, tweeted, is anyone archiving these tweets, these Trump sycophants for when they try to downplay or deny their complicity in the future? I see decent probability of many deleted tweets, writings, photos in the future. And boy, did she get ratioed.
Bad. It was bad. About 80,000 replies and tens of thousands of quote tweets.
Including one from me, which said, go ahead, make my day.
You know, this... the point is that and part of where this kind of attitude comes from is the bubble. Okay, if you are in Brooklyn, right, if you attended New York University, as she did.
Actually, she went to Boston.
Boston University. I'm sorry.
In the Bronx.
Yeah. What?
She's from the Bronx.
Yeah, but she represents, well, anyways. Anyways, but she represents a hard left district.
Mm-hmm.
She has never been anywhere where she had to care about the opinions of Republicans. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing this totalitarian mentality, this Maoist point of view. Coming from alumnus of, you know, elite private universities, Boston is not that elite. Boston University is not that elite, but it is private. It's about 70,000 a year.
Well, it's a high-end second-tier school.
Right, right. It's expensive, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to spend a lot of money to go to school there.
And either have massively good connections or pretty reasonable SAT scores.
And the point being, as I said, that these campuses are bubbles. Mm-hmm. And the climate on campus is such that you can graduate and never have to take seriously a contrary opinion. Because everyone around you who has authority in the university is somewhere to the left of Che Guevara, okay? I mean, they do not even allow libertarians on campus anymore. And so they come out of this idea that, you know, that Trump sycophants, to choose her, like this idea that anyone who supports Trump must be evil, a criminal. You have committed a crime of complicity, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, either that or you are just you have been misled and are confused. And so we need to re-educate you. Welcome to the re-education camp. I saw several people putting in dibs for the top bunk when they're sent to the gulag. but, you know, that's the thing. You know, you talk about Maoist. I think they're Maoist wannabes. I think that... they're actually like the current Chinese fascists. Mussolini said, I know the communists, they're my children. Fascism is the real deal of Marxism, not communism. And it's a national socialism rather than an international socialism. These folks are fascists, pure and simple.
Yeah. Well, no, it's wrong to call them fascists. It is just wrong. It is, you're trying to out-Godwin the left. Okay?
No, I'm not. I mean, I've read Mussolini, and this is a bunch of fascists. I'm not calling them totalitarian. Well, that's right. And
yeah, but there's a fascism is not totalitarian.
No, it is. It, by definition, it is totalitarianism, and Mussolini coined the term.
What I'm telling you is that there were nothing. There were no camps where they sent dissenters. Mussolini never did anything approaching.
I'm not saying that.
What happened in the Warsaw Ghetto?
I'm not. Hold it. That's okay. There's a difference between totalitarianism and the kind of destruction of life that you saw done by Hitler and Mao and Pol Pot and Stalin. Okay, that's genocide, and genocide is not necessarily part of fascism. Okay, it did become part of national socialism and international socialism, but fascism, the idea of nothing without the state, all within the state, nothing against the state.
Right.
Okay. That's the idea we've got going here.
The idea that truth is malleable and is whatever the party says it is, right? Okay. The idea of
democratic socialism, that is a pure Leninist invention. That one you can lay purely at the feet of Lenin in 1921.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And of course,
you have Orwell's brilliant formulation 1984 of a society where there is only endlessly, the party is endlessly right.
Right.
That is of course the ultimate evolution you move towards.
The permanent revolution, terrorism as the essential tool of the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of those.
You can see all of this falling out of Mussolini's teaching about how to be a good fascist. The idea that war is something that refreshes the state and its people. You know, it's really interesting. You know, we think in terms of the 20th century because in terms of Mao and Stalin and Hitler because they had the best body counts, but they would not have been able to pull off what they did. Not even Lenin, without what Mussolini got going in Italy.
Lenin would have
had a terrorist regime.
Lenin is ahead of Mussolini. Mussolini takes his lessons, watches very, very closely what is happening with Lenin's Italy. The Rapallo Treaty in 1922 could not have happened without the understanding already being there by Mussolini, by the faction he was pushing for that particular treaty between Italy and Russia, which was in fact the Soviet Union, which is in fact where any kind of containment of Russia of the Soviet Union breaks down. And that happened because the Italians were hearing very clearly from their socialist wing all about what Lenin was doing. Mussolini's ideas are not especially original.
No, they're not.
His ability to turn them into a program, it's a lot of it was inspired by Lenin. I know he tends to say they will be my children, but that wasn't true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are ending. We are approaching the end of the podcast, and I can hear the boogie woogie in the background. I might go out to California.
Really?
Might go down to Georgia. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's the lyric there you hear.
Yes. Well, there are a bunch of us that are escapees from California, although I might go down to Georgia sometime soon.
Yeah. And I'm telling you what, the main thing that, people listening to the podcast, is just keep calm. You know, the important thing is to take care of you, take care of your life, take care of your family and stuff like that. And if the news is stressing you out, just stop watching the news. Just, I know that you, and instead just read my blog.
That's right. Or you can check out Hogwash, or you can tune in next week for the other podcasts live,
7 o'clock,
or check
Saturday
us out
night.
Or check us out in the archives. We enjoy talking to you.
All right.
See you next week, Diana.
Talk to you then.
Good
Take
night.
Care, guys. Thank you.